This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to The Takeout, no reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to The Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the best food scenes in the country, right here in Minnesota. And nobody knows it like magazine food critic and James Beard Award finalist Jason DeRusha. Now bringing you the most interesting people and hottest trends. Let's listen in as DeRusha eats.
25 years ago, the restaurant scene was so different. So different. Our guest today, their life was quite a bit different as well. Alex and Margot Roberts are with us. Restaurant Alma is celebrating 25 years in Minneapolis. Alex and Margot, it's so good to have you with us. Are you tired after 25 years?
No, never felt better.
We found a way to stay recharged in all of this.
Alex, when you look back 25 years ago, talk about the vision as to what you were hoping to open at that time.
Yeah, there was... For me, I had been working in New York City for some really exceptional people who had a really clear vision at that time for seasonal cooking, sourcing food from small farms where a conversation about what kind of seeds were grown or varietals were grown, you know, were having to make the food really, you know, unique and special. And so I came back to Minneapolis and thought, hey, I think there's room for a restaurant like this in Minneapolis. It wasn't, you know, Lucia's was there and doing some similar things, but I thought there was room for more of a little bit different version of that.
You think back, and the reality is, like, food TV was happening, starting to happen. But it just was, it wasn't really a star celebrity chef culture. In the Midwest, there was an interest in local ingredients, as you said, largely because of Lucia, right?
Lucia was a big part of it. There were other chefs who were kind of quiet, but I think Lucia did a wonderful job of celebrating the farmers. And so, in a sense, her restaurant was celebrated too. It's that kind of two-way street of gratitude for each other, and I think she did a wonderful job of that.
Where were you two in your lives at that point? How old were you?
28.
How old were you?
25 when I met Alex. So, yeah, I was working as a registered nurse, and we met in 2000, and Alma opened in 1999. So,
how did you two meet?
We met at Dumb Brothers Coffee Shop, which is now the Cafe Alma, and introduced ourselves there, and Alex invited me in for a meal. I came in with a girlfriend of mine, and we sat at the bar at Alma, and he made all this delicious food for us, and we were sitting there like it was the best thing we'd ever eaten. And at one point she looked at me and she's like, Margot, you have to date this guy. And I'm like, oh, I know, because it was like food was like my thing. And so we went out on our first date a couple days after, and we've been hanging out ever since.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Inseparable ever since, really. I mean, it's, yeah, ever since that moment.
Yeah, I think I fell in love with his Portuguese stew and ahi tuna before I fell in love with him. So. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's good to put you in your place. You
know? Yes, yes.
Yeah. Hey, you've seen me. I mean, the food's a little more, has more beauty.
Don't sell yourself short. Come on now. Yeah, that is, I mean, that is a tale as old as time, right? Other than having that first move be the food. But the reality is, when you think about the relationship that your restaurant over the years has had with guests, it is that food, like, opens a conversation, right?
Oh, incredibly, because I was interested in her because of her energy and beauty, but when I saw her actually eat that food, because, you know, there's a type of date that we might have been on where the person doesn't really eat a lot or isn't an adventurous eater and, you know, isn't, you know, wasn't a food, you know, foodie or food, you know, person. Right. And here Margo was enjoying these dishes that were not the most conservative on the menu. I probably had chicken on the menu, but she ordered again this Portuguese stew that had homemade sausage and clams and white beans and this beautiful tomato broth with caramelized garlic. And she and her friend were just enjoying that. And it was actually a chicken liver pate dish with bacon and port wine. Yeah. There was a seared ahi tuna, kind of tataki style. And she's enjoying all these things with a Rioja or something by the glass. And I said, wow, she's cool. And she likes to eat, so we're going to get along fine.
Yeah, so I'll never forget it. It was delicious. Best thing I ever had. So, yeah.
It is so touching how you remember every element of that meal, and you both do.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you think about that in context of, you know, here you are celebrating 25 years as a restaurant, and your love story started in the same building that you're in today, but over 25 years, I mean, there have been a lot of first dates at Alma.
Wow, it's such an honor. We've had people, numerous people, get engaged there, get married in the building. Of course, celebrate milestones, of course, the graduations, the birthdays, but, you know, retirement and celebration of life events, things too, where people are honoring people that have departed and people they've lost. And it is like truly the great honor to be that place for people where they say, they call up and say, or me, even me personally, and say, we want to do this because Alma is meaningful to us, that we've had moments in life that were special. You all took care of us as a place of hospitality. And then we get to host people in those moments. It's really makes our work meaningful.
Yeah, not to mention the staff. We've had several people on staff that have gotten met at Alma, gotten married, have babies together. I mean, still work at Alma. And so, yeah, it's beautiful place in that way.
When you started 25 years ago, were you focused more on sort of the technician, tactician, culinary side of it? Whereas now, you know, I hear you talking more, and often when we've talked over the years, I feel like that human connection resonates with you at a different level than maybe just achieving the perfect balance of flavor.
Well,
is that maturity, or is that, or were you a romantic from the beginning?
I think I was a bit of a romantic from the beginning, but I think I work for some romantics. So that was an influence of people I work for that I think just, it was compelling, you know, what I experienced with them. You know, I had those moments where, like, I'm in this restaurant working and take a bite of something that I'm learning to prepare and it's just mind-blowing. It just changes you as a chef, who I'm such a sensory person with smell and taste, that I've had these moments where, like, I just, like, you just want more and more of that because it was such a powerful thing to experience. So I think it really made me want to just continue along that path.
Who inspired you when you were in New York and working around? Because you grew up here in Minneapolis area, right?
I did, yes. And I went out to New York to pursue professional cooking in 1993 at a school called the French Culinary Institute that later became the International Culinary Center in Soho in Manhattan. And that was a 6-month certificate course. So all the while, even before I went to culinary school, I had a job. And I had the great fortune to work for Danny Meyer and then Chef Michael Romano at Union Square Cafe. And then I worked at the original Boulay restaurant. And then I worked at Gramercy Tavern as well. And a couple of stints there, both in savory cooking and also in pastry. And so I had about a year of pastry experience, you know, professionally, but mainly savory cooking has been my training and experience.
We're talking with Alex and Margot Roberts, a restaurant almost celebrating 25 years, opening in 1999. When you opened up, were you just hoping to get to 1 year, 3 years? I mean, how rough was it at the beginning?
Oh, it's such a great question, Jason. I mean, we opened up in an area that was close to St. Anthony, Maine, kind of in between East Hennepin area and Dinkytown. But not a place that people would think of eating, kind of just on the University
Avenue. You're right by the highway. Mm-hmm. You're sort of in this no man's land, what it used to be.
Yeah, it kind of felt like a throughway, like kind of just a road to somewhere else in a way. And so
there was Santana's there back then.
Those French fries.
Like an all-night bodega, almost all-night bodega that everybody seems to know as well. Yeah. So maybe not the place you think of going to have a slow multi-course meal right across the street.
No,
but it worked out. It was a good landmark.
That's true, when you need to tell people where to go. But it was, I mean, today it makes sense, but at the time it was probably not where people would think of as prime restaurant real estate.
Right.
Could you just afford it? Was that?
Yeah, it was. To me, I had this kind of philosophy that I don't really think good enough is the standard to measure by. But with location, sometimes I think you got to say, well, it's good enough because it's easy to get to. Despite people not knowing the address, they knew the landmark of Dinky Town, the university, maybe Santana Foods. And of course, Stone Arch Bridge was there. Now it's in every image of the Twin Cities, the Stone Arch Bridge. And so people knew the riverfront there. And so it was kind of good enough. And of course, I guess it has been good enough because here we are 25 years later. But let me just go back on that opening piece. I mean, it was, we opened in November, we got a nice jolt of business, and then January happens like it does every year with below zero. And I remember some nights we had seven people on the books or something.
Oh, wow.
You're just so slow. There's no dishwasher. You're the dishwasher. You're the cook. There's one of us in the front of the house. And there's no social media then. We probably just had our first website so people could look at the menu and then call you to make a reservation. There weren't reservation software yet. So it was a different game. And you had to build it through word of mouth and through getting reviewed by the newspaper.
And you did get an excellent first review in the newspaper, right?
We did.
And do you remember when that came out? Because it was so interesting, right? It was so different. There wouldn't be the first look that came out, 2 weeks or 3 weeks after you open. Today, today I find myself writing things like before a place opens.
Right.
Yeah. It's crazy.
People know, right?
And but then, back then, that wasn't the norm.
Yeah, I think the review came out early in 2000, maybe late December. Jeremy Eggers did it, and it was a 3.5-star review, and it was really generous. Generous and celebrated really what we were doing. So it brought a lot of people in.
Did you think you deserved it?
Yeah, I think what he wrote about was true. I don't think he exaggerated on the beauty of the space, because it wasn't a beautiful space. It was really a very budget conscious build out.
Rustic
and yeah it's nice, but we've never had huge budgets for construction, so we
there's no design firm that came in and made it look amazing.
Not at that time.
It just was different.
His brother was building benches, like, right, the banquettes.
My twin brother is a fantastic carpenter, and we were up all night. I was his cut man on the saw, and we're building the benches and the shelving together that's in the front of the house, up into the last days before we open. I mean, it was just all hands-on experience there.
It is amazing to think, and I'm sure you can picture back those moments, right, where you're trying to achieve the dream, you're relying on friends and family to help you build the stuff and paint the walls and get it done. And of course, today now you have this hotel, you have this cafe, all attached in this beautiful building. You've been recognized by the James Beard Award. You've had, really considered one of the icons of the scene. But before you got there, you're cutting wood and hoping that someone will show up on a cold January night.
And doing dishes. And one of the stories I love to tell people about the commitment to quality to, build your reputation is every morning I would get up, and Margaret and I at that time were almost always together, and she worked as a nurse, worked a late shift too, and so we would keep the same hours. And so our day would start by will calling vegetables at Co-op Partners Warehouse or making a trip to the farmer's market on the weekend, because farmers weren't delivering food to restaurants back into that 99 and 2000 yet. It was, I had to go to them. Sometimes I go to the St. Paul Farmers Market, sometimes Minneapolis. We didn't have all the neighborhood ones yet. And we would go to Coastal Seafood and they'd let me come in the cooler and select fish, because I was knowledgeable about fish. I really had committed myself to learning and butchering, and so I knew how to select. And they were just loved that I was passionate about it, so I could just go in and then after a while we developed a relationship where they knew what I wanted and what I was looking for. And I got to stop will calling.
Were our first dates of just like going and getting will call and produce and fish, and all I asked for was a really nice, warm, delicious cup of coffee. And I was on board, so yeah.
After spending that time in the cooler, what did you think of this guy back in that time?
Super impressive, just his creativity and his, you know, will to like see this thing through. It was just like all very lovely at the time, even though, you know, he was working really hard, long hours. We spent as much time as we could together, but he really spent a large amount of time in the restaurant doing all the things, and so it was fun and exciting, and yeah,
probably lonely at times too, right?
Yeah
I mean, because the Friday nights, the Saturday nights are not available.
Exactly. So I worked at HCMC, and so our shifts were kind of the same, where we both get off around midnight. And our first dates were will call in the morning, and then in the evening, at night, it was like grabbing a slice of pizza at Pizza Luce and coming home and watching some dumb date reality TV or whatever. And videos. Remember, we watch music videos together. Yeah.
Well, that's a great commentary, Jason. Like, that was our late night dining option, was probably like Pizza Luce, and maybe Rainbow Chinese had some late hours back then, but then there wasn't a lot open.
Mm-mm.
And now look at all the options, you know, overall, if you want to eat late. I mean, it's kind of gone back since COVID. It really exploded before COVID. Yeah. But I mean, at one point, it was like a couple options.
You have infinite TV options, and you're not stuck with whatever's on, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you ever miss the old way? Or is this better? Having more choice, more options, more immediate, more social media, more.
Yeah.
It's a great question. I one thing I think is good about the way now, how things are now, is I think people get a better idea of what the place is. I would say sometimes, like back in, you know, 99, 2000, people kind of compared all restaurants to all restaurants. And so it was weird. Like for example, when we opened up Alma, we would get someone who would book like a 6 or an 8 top, and maybe it was a group of friends, and they'd come, and here we are trying to be a fine dining where people would have, you know, slow down, have a bottle of wine, have multiple courses, and they would want to order a la carte, share a couple apps, get a few entrees. Some people, I'm not eating. Maybe I'll have dessert. Open a bunch of gifts and leave all the wrapping paper around. You know, I'm like on a Saturday night, and I'm thinking, wow, you're treating this restaurant that's meant to be a dining, you know, venue, as kind of you would look a coffee shop cafe. And that was a cultural thing about dining here, is that it wasn't like New York or like Chicago or many places. It was people just kind of looked at restaurants kind of as like one, like a broader category. We knew what like a fast food was or a pizza place was, but like in dining, it was kind of like whatever you wanted it to be. And so I think, well, I don't mean that in a pretentious way. It's just, it was a little awkward because it was the table, would they take up the table for 2.5 hours? We wouldn't make any money. Mm-hmm. We couldn't survive on that, but you wanted them to feel welcome too. And so we did make them feel welcome as much as we could, but also thinking like, how do we get people to want to dine, to want to do what we do best? And that's how we moved to the prefix menu. That's what we're known for.
Since
2002, we were a la carte originally, and then we moved to prefix in 2002, and now all these years later, we still are that. Mm. And that just worked for us.
Alex and Margot Roberts are with us, Restaurant Alma, celebrating 25 years here in the Twin Cities. The number of awards that you've received over the years is sort of staggering. It had to be for you when you sort of sat down and thought about, all right, like how many times have we been finalist for Best Chef from the James Beard Foundation, 4 times. Won it in 2010. National semifinalist for Outstanding Restaurant in 2012. Service, couple semifinalists. National Outstanding Chef 3 times. I mean, sort of remarkable when you look at that. Does that matter for you as a leader or as a creative person, is it a way of keeping score in a way? Is it a validation, or is it not something that really registers for you?
Well, two things. I think it is a validation that you have a version of excellence that's kind of just worth noting, worth experiencing, that it's doing,
something. Excellence is the word, I think.
And there should be, and I think there's many versions of excellence. Like, I've never liked best, like best of generally. I mean, because I think there's no one best. I like a lot of best is fine, but so I think it validates a version of excellence, and that's what I see that as, not only for me, but for the team. And so every single one of those categories are a team award, even though it is outstanding chef. We like to put it on a single face or a single name, but that is always team. And so it's a wonderful thing to build your culture and that sense of accomplishment. And I could go on and list all these names. Margot mentioned, you know, some of the people that have been with us for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, 24 years, 18 years, 16 years, another 18 years, I'm thinking. These are all just people from Alma. It's incredible. And I probably should just shout them out, because you've got James Hurdler and Lucas Rosenbrook and Maggie Whelan.
James, who does your wine, was there almost from the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yes, 24 years.
In service.
Mm-hmm. And then Matt Sprague.
Mm-hmm.
These are four people that have committed so much of their lives to help us create that vision of excellence. That version, I should say.
Well, now, I mean, Margot.
Mm-hmm.
Always there.
You've always been there, but more formally, you've mm-hmm. been there for quite a while, right?
Yeah. So I started out like not really being involved in it at all. And then as we started having babies and raising a family, I stayed home and took care of the kids. And then when we purchased the building that Alma's in 2015, that's when I started moving a little bit more into the business.
Were you nervous about sort of that line between husband, wife, and then also being business partners?
Not so nervous about that, but nervous about like my abilities, I think, to be in that world, just because I was just always on the outskirts, like eating things and you know, just
oh, isn't that
being
interesting?
Like
a little imposter syndrome.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
yeah. Do I
yeah,
belong?
Exactly. But you know, it just,
how'd you get over that? Or have you?
Just doing it every day. I think I'm finally over that. Yeah. Yeah, like I finally feel like, you know, oh, okay, I'm kind of making this work, and I have a skill set, you know, like with the provision store, just getting my hands in everything, is from like bake off to making sandwiches to doing all the apothecary stuff, you know, working with the staff. And so now I'm feeling like, yeah, I'm a part of this, like truly. But yeah, it took a while.
Yeah.
Well, and you've always been influential. You've been mm-hmm. behind the scenes, because obviously when you're home and allowing me to work a zillion hours is a huge contribution,
mm-hmm.
Not only to mm-hmm. me and the business, but our family. But Margo and I were always talking about the business. She was always yeah. helping me. And so there was a partnership there behind the scenes that was part of Alma, part of Brasa as well. And so it's mm-hmm. even though you weren't a face yet for mm-hmm. many years, you were still influential. And now, you not only are a face and a person that's producing all the time, mm-hmm. you know, she created a whole other layer of this business with our retail and furnishing the products in the hotel first, and then became a retail line in the cafe and the provision store. And so I think one reason why you've been accepted or part of it is people have seen that you've just brought more beauty to what Alma is and mm-hmm. had a new vision for something that nobody else had that vision for it. So you brought something completely unique that kind of grew us as a concept.
You're really
and
talking
as a brand.
About the apothecary products that
yeah.
you created starting in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
But there was, and I, you know, there's a very distinct smell and feel to your products that mm-hmm. now are very much. Today, when I smelled you, I felt like I was in the building. I felt like I was in the hotel,
yeah.
which is sort of remarkable, right?
Yeah.
That you're able to create a sense of place that is kind of so harmonious with what the rest of Alma is about.
Yeah, that I feel like that was the goal for us, to create these sort of seasonal scents that added to the experience. So yeah, that was our kind of main goal for creating the apothecary line through for the hotel rooms.
For you as a creative person, was there something different about literally creating a thing?
What do you mean?
I think a lot of us consider ourselves creative. We think creative thoughts.
Yeah.
We have ideas. But I think about this a little bit. Like, I talk. Mm-hmm. I ask questions. Mm-hmm. I generate conversation. But I don't really make anything.
Yeah.
There's something, and especially when you're with a chef who his first date move is making something.
Yeah.
Like, you were always a part of a process, but then you literally made something. And I wonder if that, like, helped sort of allow yourself to feel like you belonged in this world of people who are making things.
For sure. And I think it started when I took over doing the flower arranging for the space and just creating in that way. That helped me kind of move into being a part of the business. And, you know, like, I always want to just be making stuff with my hands and never wanting to do all the other stuff. But now the other things are coming a little bit naturally to me, too. But for me, it was just I love this idea of always having my hands in something and making things. And I think that that's really true to how Alex is too, where he started out cooking and that was his thing, to like create these meals, and now he's transitioned into more of this business side of it. But yeah,
Alex, what have you learned from Margot?
Well,
the same question's coming to you, so be ready.
Well, I'm going to put it in the context of work, because I've learned a whole lot from Margot about life.
and sure.
But I'm going to say in the restaurant, I think she really showed me that having this commitment to bringing beauty into people's lives is really connects with people. Like, the letters we get about her products, and when people want a seasonal scent that maybe is not quite back in season the way they write about it, it reminds me of just exactly like what we have to keep doing with food, because that bringing beauty into people's lives is inspiring, and it kind of makes them just stop and think about the beauty of seasonality, the beauty of changing seasons, and how our food systems and our way of eating is just connected to ourselves. And so her products have done that and kind of reinvigorated me, because I've gotten away from the kitchen more. Mm-hmm. I'm more of a manager. I manage people more and I'm in conversation a lot like you, but not on the radio, just in the business with all these wonderful people. And so I do cook a lot. I don't cook as much as I used to. And so that helped me really connect with, like, make me really think about that as a component of learning for my kitchen leadership, as well as for me, not to get too disconnected from being hands-on and with the food and with the products.
Margot, what have you learned from watching Alex?
The biggest thing that I think I've learned is how to be in relationship with people. And I think that Alex gets most of his success from understanding how to be in relationship with people in a respectful, kind way. I mean, he's just a guy who's always, like, considering the other people. And so for me, that's been my biggest takeaway from being in a relationship with Alex, is just like understanding how to connect with people. He does that really well, and I think that that's a big part of his success.
We're going to pause, and when we come back, I want to explore a little bit about the concepts of excellence and the concepts of creativity, sort of how you keep the juices flowing and keep the eye on the ball, because I think these are lessons, whether you care about restaurants or you care about your accounting firm, these are things that we're all looking for, that sort of inspiration. Alex Roberts, Margot Roberts, Restaurant Almost celebrating 25 years. DeRussia Eats back after this.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of casino-style games like bingo, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere, with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to The Takeout, no reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to The Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
DeRussia Eats continues. Here's your host, Jason DeRussia.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. I'm Jason DeRussia. This is DeRussia Eats coming from Odyssey WCCO Radio in Minneapolis. We're talking with the co-owners of a 25-year institution, in a way, here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Restaurant Alma opened 25 years ago. It has blossomed into a hotel, a cafe, a side restaurant, a fast casual restaurant called Brasa, and a provisions store as well. Alex Roberts and Margot Roberts, we've talked a lot about the journey. I want to talk about the future and how you keep the juices flowing for the present. You mentioned the concept of excellence. You are more of a leader now than in the trenches. And in fact, you've promoted one of your really excellent chefs to also be in a leadership position. How, as you separate yourself from what many people think of as the work, how do you inspire excellence? How do you do that?
I think, like, in studying excellence, regardless of what industry it is, you see people that are committed to serving others and creating consistency. Obviously, some industries are very based on something that's novel, whether it be tech or something new. Cooking isn't so much about that. It's oftentimes largely built on what's succeeded in the past. And so I think helping people understand kind of that if you're a chef and you're stepping into this kind of river of life of being a cook, a professional cook, there are things that will help you succeed because you're tapping into like the wisdom of previous generations and kind of the best practices of today. So you have kind of a responsibility to understand that. It's not about you. It's not about your ego. It's about like what contributes to excellence in our field and also outside of our field. And you need to learn that. You need to kind of immerse yourself in that in a very humble way and try to understand how you fit in with that, if that makes sense. So really looking out, you know, and kind of panning out to understand what that means.
When it comes to food, do you have to just like eat at the best places or eat at like, to me, I've found like growing my food catalog of experiences is what's made me a better judge as to what is possible, at least.
Absolutely. I think the best thing you can do as a chef, maybe it's twofold. Experiment and cook as much as you possibly can and take risks and challenges with ingredients to learn. So whether it's on your own time at home and doing like R&D if you have the luxury to do it, or changing your menu and getting feedback, of course, number one, from the guest. It doesn't matter how much of I like it. I'm just one person. I need to cook for what other people enjoy and make sure that they have pleasure in that food. So you need to make sure that people are enjoying that food. But second would be, yes, going out to eat, right? Mm-hmm. Food is always changing. And thankfully, the concept of what American food is, and this is really important to what Alma is, that American cuisine is constantly getting redefined as a more diverse cuisine and involving more cultural influences. Thankfully, I mean, think if it would have stopped with like English food or something like that, it would be like the most boring. Nothing against a good English meal, it can be fantastic. But if it was only that, I don't think we'd be that excited to go out to eat. Thankfully, we see influences as wide ranging from Vietnamese to Mexican to Italian to, you know, various Middle Eastern cuisines. I mean, all that has enriched our idea of what American food is. And so by learning that and committing to that is mm-hmm. also you make you a better chef as well.
You two go out to eat a lot?
We do. I mean, not as much lately with, you know, the teenage kids and all the...
Kids really mess everything up, I gotta tell you.
Sport, club sports.
All you do is drive to sporting events.
Yeah, yeah, but like when we first met, like that was, I feel like that's what we were doing whenever we had time off. We were going to a different restaurant, hanging out with other foodies, doing all the things. So yeah, it's one of our things that we love to do together.
If you were to ask me 2 years ago what I thought about sort of the newer crop of restaurants, I would have told you it's pretty boring, pretty safe, pretty dull, nothing really exciting me. And this year in Minnesota, that changed for me. That we saw an explosion of really kind of places that revealed like another side of culture. So we have this, you know, two incredible restaurants anchored in the Hmong experience, which is in both are outstanding.
Outstanding, absolutely.
And you know, things are finally changing where we're starting, and I don't know like what unleashed this. You know, maybe enough time has passed since COVID that we can get beyond just a fried chicken place. Nothing, I love fried chicken. Nothing against it.
Or a burger.
Or a burger. Yeah. Like, it's sort of Midwest. Like, I get it. It's safe. This is what our audience wants. But, like, also.
Yeah, and I love that people are talking about these places, too, and that it is becoming, you know, like a thing that's getting written up about. You know, like, one of the restaurants that we love to go to with our kids is this Korean restaurant in St. Paul, Mirror of Korea. And like, if you ask my kids today, like, what's your favorite thing to eat? They're talking about Korean food. And so I love that it's,
Well, I love the example you gave of Diane's place in Binai. So you've got two Hmong American chefs. And what's, I think, kind of beautiful about both their history as chefs and working in for different types of kitchens and then kind of claiming their own version of what their American restaurant is, because they are Hmong restaurants, but they're also American restaurants. Because I think a way to define that is that they could probably have people from the Hmong community go there and say, hey, this isn't Hmong food, right? Now and then say, well, yeah, I mean, it is Hmong influenced. And they're Hmong people, so they can claim it as Hmong, but they're also doing something creative, just like I've done something creative from what my background and influences have, you know, have been, and so on and so forth. So I just love that those restaurants are both uniquely Hmong restaurants, but also uniquely American restaurants. And that is the beauty of our dining scene, that they're not stuck in some past that can't change. They can just continue to create, kind of back to your point, and evolve. And be creative and have a mix of things.
Yeah, and when we travel, like when we go to different places with our kids or whatever, we are always talking about how great the Minnesota food scene is. So like wherever we go, we're comparing it to all the things that we can get right here at home. And sometimes it just doesn't add up to like what Minnesota is offering in the food scene. So it's really impressive.
Yeah, we punch above our weight, I think, as the size of city we are.
I think what's changed, though, is over 25 years, you know, there was a heyday for us where we were sort of an unusual part of the American scene, at least. And today I wonder if we've lost some of that distinctiveness, not of any fault of our own, but just the fact that almost all quality mid-size cities have at least some sort of scene, which that wasn't always the case. When you started, certainly, we didn't really have, we had great restaurants, but there was no scene. Really.
Yeah, we had a handful of good restaurants, but they were more like than different, kind of like steakhouse, supper club, you know, and also at that time you had to be one thing. You had to be Italian, you had to be steakhouse, you had to be French. This idea of like I'm a new American or contemporary American restaurant, people's like, what's that? That's why I had 7 reservations on January 7th, 20 below zero. You know, like people just like weren't identifying with what that was. Now people get what new American, contemporary American is, and they like it.
Yeah.
And social media is really funny too, because when you know, when Instagram and stuff was first coming out, you look at like these photos of places you want to go eat, and I remember like traveling to Iowa or something with the kids and being like, oh, look, I found this place on Instagram and all the pictures were just like perfect. And we go there and it's clearly just like a Instagrammable moment, but like the food doesn't really add up to the picture. And so I think that is changing too, where people are understanding, oh, it can't just be like a photo of something pretty and delicious, but it actually has to be the thing, like a real thing. So
right, if it looks good, it'll get people in the door. Yeah. But it, if it's going to last, and this is a great thing to talk about, like, well, how do you make it 25 years?
How do you make it?
Because I really appreciate you taking the time and to ask us all these questions and for us to be talking about ourselves. But again, I think in that spirit of serving others, I want people to hear from us, hey, you can make it 25 years too. Mm-hmm. But I think there's a lot of things you should do, make sure you're doing to, if you want a chance at that, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying I have the blueprint, but I think we've done a lot of things that I think if other people would do those same things, I think it'll bring them success. And I talk to a lot of restaurateurs who, for example, you brought up Yia Vang and Vinay. You know, we met multiple times as he was getting his project off the ground, and he sought out myself and many other people in the community to try to learn from and say, well, how do I create a restaurant that's going to have longevity in some set of sustainability? And so I think there is kind of a lot of there's some pattern, themes and patterns.
What are some of those things that jump out?
I mean, I think putting others first, making sure that you are bringing value. And so for me, doing a pretty expensive seasonal tasting menu that has a high percentage of local products, of organic products, it's a much more expensive experience at Alma than a lot of places. I mean, organics are still almost twice the price of conventional items, and not a lot of people value that difference, and that's okay. I'm not judgmental. We serve conventional produce too, but we also have a commitment to organics, which makes our restaurant more expensive. So value for that is going to be a different thing than a place that you can get like a really like affordable pasta dish, let's say a la carte or something. So, but I think you have to give value. So
there has to be some proposition there, of some statement of value.
Yes, and that people who understand how expensive organic food is, they come to Alma and say, oh, that's a good price for that quality of food,
right,
that kind of thing.
Right.
But those two come to mind. Evolution, that you have to change with the marketplace. You can't just keep doing the same thing, period. So whether that at one point was, remember how service used to be kind of like fake formal?
Yes.
they'd come to the table and almost give you like a little bow, like, yes, sir, I'll, right, right away, and it's like, why are you calling me sir? Or like, I'm just like kind of t-shirt. So like, I think we saw that influence of like the casualization of fine dining, great manners, but less formality. Restaurants that stuck in that formality, a lot of them aren't around anymore because it made people too uncomfortable. It made it feel too special or, rare. And then they didn't want to go there on a Tuesday night or Wednesday night. And now, you can't just be busy a couple of nights and make it. So you got to evolve with both from the hospitality side and the food side to continue.
Yeah. One thing that comes to mind for me is just this idea of hard work, and you can't, I would say anybody starting a business, the reality is that you can't delegate everything. Mm-hmm. You have to be present and you have to be committing to whatever it is you're doing. And so I think that's a big thing that helps.
That's such a great point. I talked to Jim Diley, who is one of the founders of Fulton Brewing, and he talked about delegating. And as you rise up and grow bigger, while you have to delegate so many things, he said, I found that I was delegating away everything that I really kind of gave me the juice to keep going or that I was passionate.
Yeah.
So he sort of brought back one, and I don't remember exactly what it was, but he told me I shouldn't be doing it, but I need to do it.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting too, like understanding what to keep your soul connected to what you're doing, what you might need to bring back in.
Yep, yeah.
As well as being willing to do kind of the dirty work sometimes that shows that you, at least for me, I have this message that I give new employees when I do kind of an orientation to our culture or a place. I say, we are all equals as people here. We have different roles and responsibilities, different pay, things like that, but we're all equals as people. And I want you to feel that when you're here. So like, for example, in some restaurants, you might see people just like throwing plates back in the dish area full of food, not scraped or things like that. I say, you have to scrape the dishes and stack them as if you were doing the dishes. So that's a very simple way to show that I am putting myself in your shoes. Mm-hmm. But I also think that oftentimes there's kind of manager abuse. People think that because you're a manager, you know, people can just bring all their complaints to you endlessly. Meanwhile, you can solve that problem yourself, and it's not really a big issue. And so don't just come to your manager and just dump every problem at their feet. Like, solve your own problems. And so whether it be the top position or the bottom position, this idea of really thinking about what it's like to be in someone's shoes, you know, those are like things that if you establish that, you know, and you've got to lead by example first, right, then you can build culture that I think really is a place that people like to be, no matter what that position is.
At the 25-year point, when you look ahead, what keeps you creatively stimulated to move forward? Do you find, are there books that you read? Are there podcasts or speakers, or what? Where do you find that sort of inspiration? Is it just within food, or is it more broad culturally? Some people, it's music or theater or whatever.
For me, I love Alma as an establishment, or just as like Alma's like a culture. It's like the whole building, the whole vibe, and so that keeps me this idea that you can create all of these beautiful things in one building. You can make delicious pastries and lotion for your body and, you know, have the perfect wine list, like all of these things. I feel like that's what keeps me going, is that it's always like something new to like focus on and create and do all these wonderful things just within this box of what Alma is. So for me, I feel like at this point I could do it for 25 more years, because there's always like something new and fresh about Alma and what we do there. But I love reading and traveling and looking at different photos of things, and all of that stuff is just so inspiring and keeps me going.
Yeah, I still get the most energy from like handling food or being around the activities of the restaurant give me energy. But a lot of times I'm just in meetings or on my laptop doing things, because we have, you know, 6 restaurants now and catering and all that. And so it's a lot of coordination, a lot of that. But, you know, I would say like, and this is maybe kind of esoteric stuff around leadership, when you have, you know, 250 plus employees in the organization, I've had to learn that along the way. So, you know, I always admired how you were able to get by on those early nights when you were on TV. And people would joke with me that they'd see an email come out of my computer at 2:30 in the morning, and then they see me back up at, you know, 7, you know, answering issues or even before that. And so I had kind of a hobby of like, when I was expanding, like learning how to, you know, raise money to finance a business, or how to, you know, manage construction projects, like, you know, all these things I had to kind of learn on my own time. So yeah, podcasts, blogs, like books, just like I had to learn a lot about business, but I still look at cookbooks a lot. I still love like all things food and that. So, so you had multiple things to kind of keep you just tuned in and learning, so you can kind of evolve with the business too. And because a big part of what I've had to do is kind of get out of the way, you know, so we have some like weekly meetings at some of our businesses. And so like, it was only very recently that I stopped going to the weekly leadership meeting at Alma and letting the people that have been there for literally like 18 years run it. And then I kind of pop in every, you know, I don't know, every few weeks, and or maybe they ask me to come in and do something. But what's really cool is my HR director, she goes to that meeting every week to kind of be eyes and also, you know, just facilitate a little bit. But it's brought out people's leadership for me not to be there. And that was so hard for me to do. I could not step away from that meeting forever. But I have to admit that something about those guys not wanting to disappoint me or not wanting to compete with me, they would just kind of defer to me. And now I'm seeing people become like the best version of themselves as managers, as leaders, that I've ever seen them. And it actually was because I left the room. Like, I don't know, it's kind of like maybe like letting your kids go as a parent. I don't know. I'm not calling
sometimes
them kids.
Sometimes you have to leave the room, right?
Yeah, so I'm still learning what to do and how to handle these things.
Yeah, talking about leaving the room, we we left our 18-year-old at home for the first time while the rest of us traveled to our house in Michigan. And he was making dinner for himself every night and having friends over and getting the house all set up and clean. And so, like, we left the room and, like, he's like an adult, like doing all these like adult things. And
I didn't think of that. That's a great, great comparison.
Yeah, you never quite know how that's going to shake out when you leave the house and leave an 18-year-old in charge.
He's sending us pictures of his like plate of chicken parmesan that he made for himself.
Which he hasn't made for me yet. I sent a complaint to management already.
Right, exactly. Well, Alex Roberts and Margot Roberts, congratulations. 25 years is rare. It is rare. And especially in this state when you're not a steakhouse. I mean, we have steakhouses that have been around a long time, but that is the genre that sort of is the, yep, that will be there forever. And maybe it'll be you guys. Maybe it'll be Alma celebrating 50 or 75 years.
Yeah, I mean, it is a vibe. Alma's a vibe, so.
Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Margot says she's got at least 25 years left.
I feel like that's the first time I've heard that.
So that's, I guess I know what I'm doing for 25 years.
Right, exactly. No retirement.
Yeah. No.
Very good. Thank you guys so much.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks so much for listening to the DeRussia Eats podcast on WCCO Radio, 830 AM. We do conversations with chefs, with farmers, with small business people every Tuesday and Thursday at 4 p.m. The podcast is available every week. If you enjoyed what you heard, I would love for you to leave us a review. Give us however many stars you can. I don't know, 10, 20 stars would be nice, 5 stars. And leave your feedback as well. It really helps us grow and helps support covering the food community here at WCCO Radio and in the DeRussia Eats podcast. If you'd like to email me with an idea or a question about the restaurant scene, you can email Jason at Odyssey, AUDACY.com. Jason at Odyssey.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time on the DeRussia Eats podcast.
Thanks for listening to DeRussia Eats. Dan Cook is our producer. Jason DeRussia is your host. Please subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and leave us a review. DeRussia Eats is a production of Odyssey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
I'm CBS News Chief Washington Correspondent Major Garrett, and you're invited to the Takeout, no reservations required. Every weeknight, our podcast serves up a balanced menu of politics, policy, and pop culture. The day's happenings with curiosity, informality, and humor. Serious discussion, but we don't take ourselves too seriously. Follow and listen to the Takeout with me, Major Garrett, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.